with us. The clue is in that name again, in verse 23. The virgin will be with child and will give birth to a son, and they will call him Emmanuel, which means God with us. We focused on the God bit. Could a virgin birth really happen? How can God become man? So we focused on the God bit. Let's focus on the with us bit. God with us. That scale, that spectrum of belief. Some of us are more convinced. Some of us are more like Will in the video, more at the zero end of the spectrum. One, two, not quite sure where we are with those things. But that scale thing, I wouldn't want to be misunderstood by picturing things as a scale like that. I wouldn't want to be heard to be saying the higher up the scale you are, the more sorted out your life is. And if you can make it up to 7, 8, 9, 10, then you're practically perfect. Okay, that's absolutely not what I'm saying. I'm saying that some of us have got lots of questions and doubts. Most of us have got some questions and doubts. But as we go on in life, it is possible to find answers to some of those questions and doubts. And it's absolutely crucial that we don't suppress those questions and doubts. And that we say, can this really be true? Can I really expect this to have really happened? And it's good and healthy to ask those sorts of questions. And it doesn't matter where you are on the scale, you've got problems. I know that because I know I've got problems. We've all got problems in our lives. And that is, for that reason, wherever we are on that scale of belief or doubt, the truth that God is with us is something that all of us need to reconnect with. And Christmas is a great time to reconnect with it, that we need to say to ourselves, what I need in my life is God's power and his presence. Who doesn't need that? Now, you would think that if God showed up, it would create a bit of a stir. And if you were to think that, you'd be exactly right. Because when Jesus did show up, that's exactly what happened. You know how in if you're playing pool or snooker, you know at the beginning of a frame, you hit the white, what do? You hit the white cue ball, and the ball goes hurtling down the table, and it hits the pack of the other balls, of the red balls, and they go scattering absolutely everywhere in all different directions. Jesus is a little bit like that white cue ball. As his power and presence became evident to those around him as he grew, people responded to him by bouncing off him in all kinds of different directions. And you can't meet Jesus and see who he was without reacting to him. He absolutely never left people cold. People always went pinging off in different directions, if you like, when Jesus crashed into their lives. Some people found themselves driven away from Jesus, and some people found themselves drawn towards him. And if you don't feel driven from him or drawn towards him, it must be that you haven't totally grasped yet exactly the staggering kind of things that he was saying about himself. No one just shrugged their shoulders with Jesus. How could they? He's God with us, or at least that's what he's saying. His power and his presence always produced a reaction around him, people pinging off him in different directions. Sometimes the reaction to him was hostile. You get an example of that in the next few verses of this passage in Matthew with the story of King Herod wanting to do away with this baby who they were saying is God become man. And Herod is just a taste of things to come. Why was there such hostility to Jesus in his own lifetime? Emmanuel means God with us. But listen again to what Jesus means. Verse 21, she will give birth to a son, and you are to give him the name Jesus, because he will save his people from their sins. So the name Jesus also means something. It means God saves. Saves us from what? From our sins. That's why we need God with us. That's why we need his power and his presence in our lives. And that's why there was such hostility to Jesus, because he came along and he said to people, you're sinners, and I've come to save you. And that's not a pleasant thing for anybody to hear about themselves. What did he mean by that? What he meant is that we keep putting the wrong things at the center of our lives. I often picture it like this. If you imagine your life as a triangle, just imagine a triangle like that, okay? So the points at the top, the base at the bottom, and along that long line at the base, in your mind's eye, just imagine everything that makes up your life. So your hopes, your fears, your dreams, your loves, what makes you laugh, what you watch on telly, what you do in your spare time, what you like to read, you know, just everything, that your possessions, your job, your friends, people, places, home, all that kind of stuff, holidays, everything about you is written very small along that bottom line of the triangle. Okay. Now, it's a triangle, so as you go up the triangle, the next line up in the triangle is a little bit shorter. So you're going to have to choose which things stay on the line. The slightly less important things can just drop off the bottom. Next line up's a bit narrower, so it's the more important things that stay on the line. Next line up narrower, next line up narrower. So you get to a short little line near the top of the triangle. It's only got room for two or three things. What are the two or three most important things in your life? Often they're people, aren't they? People, other very important things to us as well. And then right at the top of the triangle, there's a point. And at the top, there's only room for one thing. What is that one thing in your own life? It's often something very good, like a person or a job, or it might be money, might be pleasure, might be sex, might be alcohol, might be marriage, it might be the desire to get married. It could be anything that's the one thing at the top of the triangle, the most important thing in your life at the moment. You can tell what that thing is in your life because it's the thing you get up for in the morning. So when you've got that thing, or when that thing, that part of your life is going really well, there's a spring in your step. Do you know what I mean by that? Or oppositely, if you haven't got that thing, or when that thing in your life is going really badly, well, life feels rubbish, and you don't feel like getting up in the morning. So whatever that thing is, maybe we'll let you have two or three things up there on the top of the triangle. Those things at the top there, that's what life is all about for you, okay? And Jesus said, that's what it is to be a sinner. It's when we put the wrong thing, which might be a very good thing in itself, but a wrong thing to put at the very top, at the very center of life. We put something at the center of life which isn't God, and that's the thing we live for. And Jesus said, he said, I've come to change that. That's what I've come to change. That's why you need my power and your presence in your life. And lots of people said to him, no, we don't. How dare you? And they responded in hostility to him. Because whatever it is that's at the top of that triangle is way more important than God is to them, to me, to you. And Jesus, I don't want you changing that because that thing's too important to me. So they respond in hostility. Not everyone responded that way, though. Not everyone responded like Herod did. And there's an example of this, too, in the very next passage. The wise men come along, and they welcome Jesus, and they worship him. And they say, thank God that God is with us. And that's a taste of things to come, too, as many, many other people welcomed Jesus. Now, why did they do that? Why did people welcome? Strangely, very strangely, for exactly the same reason. Because Jesus said to them, you're sinners, and I've come to save you. And they recognized the truth of what he was saying. That thing that I'm living for, that thing that's at the top of the triangle, it isn't satisfying me like I thought it would. It shouldn't be pushing God off the top spot of my life. That's wrong, and I'm thirsty for something else. There needs to be something bigger, something greater, something more worthy that I can live for at the center of life. And Jesus came along and said, that's me. And I've come to save you from your sin, and you need my power and my presence in your life. So do you remember that video that we just watched before a few minutes ago? The guy who somehow magically turns up at the nativity scene with the shepherds and the wise men and all their gifts, but all he's got, do you remember, is a mince pie foil to offer. There's an old traditional story like that about a shepherd who supposedly turned up at the nativity without a gift. And like the guy in the video, he's a bit embarrassed about the fact that he hasn't got anything. But he spots a problem. He notices that Joseph has his arms full of gold and frankincense. And he sees that the third wise man is about to offer his gift to Mary, but Mary's arms are full with her new little treasured one, and she kind of needs to offload the baby. But who would be worthy enough to hold the baby Emmanuel? And rather wonderfully in this story, Mary turns to the empty-handed shepherd, and she gives Jesus to him. And precisely because his hands are empty, he's able to receive him. He brings nothing, and he ends up holding God in his hands. And whoever made that story up, made it up as a picture of what it means to become a Christian. It's when you say, look, I know I've been putting all the wrong things at the top of the triangle. I know that can't be right. I admit it. But what can I do? And the answer is, actually, it's more of a question of what God can do. He hasn't come to ask us to give him anything. The whole point and meaning of Christmas is that he's come to give us something, to give us himself, to be God with us, so that we might have his power and his presence in our lives. So how do you get God's powerful presence in your life? Well, I think it depends where you would place yourself on that scale of belief. If you're down the sort of 0, 1, 2 end, you're probably asking questions and you're saying, these are my doubts. These are the reasons I don't believe it. I'd like to dig into that. And I want to say to you, ask those questions. We would love to help you ask and answer those questions. If you'd be interested in doing one of the courses that we run, please fill in one of the little response cards that you'll find on the pew in front of you. If you're further up the scale and you're saying, you know, well, I think I do believe these things, I think I do believe them, then maybe it's actually time to admit, perhaps for the first time, that the wrong thing has been at the center of life. And simply to say to Jesus, Jesus, please bring your power, your powerful presence into my life and take center stage as the thing I now live for. To do that, you would need to say that to him, pray that to him. And all of us, wherever we are on that scale, we all need the picture filling out of what it looks like, what it feels like, what it means to have God with us, his powerful presence at work within us. And so if you can manage to think beyond Christmas to January, to that horrible post-Christmas time when all the candles have gone out and the decorations have come down, we're going to have a series of services here on the Sundays in January, looking at some of the issues of what it means to have God's powerful presence in your life. How does that work? What does that look like? What does it feel like? Especially in relation to certain topics like how do I deal with stress and anxiety in my life? Can God's powerful presence make a difference to that? Or what about issues of forgiveness and resentment? Can Jesus make any difference to those kind of everyday real life issues? They're the kind of things that we're going to grapple with in January as we try and fill out the picture of what it means for God to be with us on that top spot. So if that grabs your eye, please do come back to some of those meetings in January. And as you leave this evening, someone will give you a card, hopefully, with the dates and a reminder that that is happening. In the meantime, we've got loads of carol services over the rest of December. Please come back next Sunday evening, the Sunday after that, if you like. Lovely to see you again, and I hope you won't rush away this evening. I'll be around if you want to pick me up, talk to me about any of the things that I've sort of talked about this evening. Please do come and have a word, ask a question. Don't go away without doing that. Thank you for coming this evening. Thank you very much for listening to me just now. And I'm going to hand back to Leon.